Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. This is our ninth episode. I'm your co-host, Eli Cooper. And today, my partner in crime, Mike Badzik, is not on today's show, but it's for a good cause. He is out in Akron, close to his hometown, at a protest, given the recent events with the George Floyd murder. So he's out there fighting, you know, for the rights of Black people, which we absolutely appreciate him doing. You know, so thank you, Mike. We miss you. We'll see you back later this week. But thank you again for fighting a good fight. However, I'm not by myself today. We have a very special guest, a former teammate of mine at Lock Haven University. He is the fourth all-time leading scorer in just three seasons. Was also second in points per game all-time, fourth in assists, and 10th in steals. And mind you, this is all in three seasons. My guy, Wally Hepburn. How's it going, bro?
I'm good, Coop. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. How's the little one? That's awesome. That goes. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we appreciate you coming on the show today.
No problem. Yeah, shout out to your co-host, man. I'm sure you're not here, but at least it was for a good cause.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, with your, you know, from Philly and in Philly currently, and, you know, if you guys have been keeping up with the news, there's been a lot of, you know, protests and things like that going on in Philly. So, you know, talk a little bit about what's going on in your area. How's the George Floyd murder going, and I mean, you know, how are people taking it? What's the response been like in Philly?
People taking it hard, like, they feel as though something needs to be done, like, it's becoming, like, apparent what's going on, about how Black men are just out here being killed, and everybody's just tired of being quiet about it, or tired of trying to do what they claim is the right thing, so we're making a stand and standing up for what we believe in. And it's just been, it's been getting a little chaotic out here. They're like breaking the stores and doing everything. Like, that's a little, that's got the city and a little of an uproar right now. But the protesting, like the meaningful protesting and what they're standing up for is big. So it's definitely needed at this point. Like, we have to take a stand.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, hundreds of years of frustration that's boiling over for people. So, you know, for people wondering why it's escalating so much, it's pretty apparent. You know what I mean? There's never been a point in time where, you know, Black people weren't unjustly being murdered and incarcerated at a higher rate, you know, and things like that. So, of course people are rioting. What did you really expect? You know, people don't feel like their voices are being heard. And, you know, so the least we can do right now is show how we feel. And some people are going to express that differently than others. I'm okay with people who peacefully protest. And I understand why people are, you know, looting and rioting and things like that. They're you know, they want to be heard as much as possible in whatever way, shape, or form that they can express that is what's going to happen. So, you know, I stand with everybody. You know, who's out there protesting in whatever form you're doing it in, you know, as long as your voice is being heard, the worst thing you can do right now is be silent. I think that's the last thing anyone should be doing. Black, white, Asian, whatever, you see injustice going on, you got to speak out about it, because if you don't, you allow it to continue. So
you being quiet is making it a bigger problem.
Exactly. So, you know, in the article that I released today, which, you know, a lot of you guys have responded to, thank you for that, but I kind of got into that a little bit there, why, like, it's not okay to be silent anymore. It's not okay for people to consume our culture, you know, root for our Black athletes all the time, and then when it's time to actually stand up for Black people, you're nowhere to be found. So, you know, if you're out there, you know, fighting the good fight, and that's why I have a lot of respect for Mike. For those of you that don't know, Mike is a white guy, But he's, as long as I've known him, he's been like this. He's, you know, someone who understands, you know, from an outsider looking in, who, you know, he's someone who understands the issues that we go through. He sympathizes with it. And as you can see, he's out there fighting for us. So we appreciate that for sure. Yeah. So, well, we brought Wally on because Wally has a pretty great story, honestly, you know, as far as his basketball career goes. And then obviously it was quite successful, led to an international playing. So you played for Newman back before they entered the PIAA. Newman was a powerhouse back then. They had, you know, Scoop Jardine, Rick Jackson, who both went on to play for Syracuse, just to name some of the bigger names. And you were also a part of that team. Talk a little bit about what your role was back then as a part of that team, what that experience was like.
It was a great experience. It didn't really necessarily go the way I wanted it, but it actually helped me out because at Newman, like, till to this day, like, they play six guys a year, maybe seven at the most. So, like, there's a lot of talent going through. So, at the end of the day, we're all fighting for those six spots, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, it's just, like, every day it's, like, a constant battle, like, constantly fighting for your spot up on the depth chart. Like, everybody's trying to get on the court, but you know going there that he's not going to play that many guys, so you have to wait your turn.
Right.
So I pretty much just went year by year, like, just going up the ladder. Like, I started out as a freshman on the freshman team. And it's crazy, the Marvis Twins actually went to Newman with us our freshman year, and they were just on the freshman team. So
Damn. That
kind of shows you the type of talent that was there, but you just, like, pretty much had to wait. So right. They had to go their way up the ladder. So it was just like that. Like, freshman year, it was just, like, JV. And freshman, sophomore year, it was JV. And then I got moved up to varsity. And then the last 2 years, like, my junior year, I was, like, the seventh man on the depth chart. So, like I said, you play, like, six people, so I would get, like, sparing minutes. So, my junior year, but we was winning. Like, we won the championship my sophomore, my junior year. And, like, we were a powerhouse at the same time, so we were winning a lot of games by a lot of points. So, I got some time, but, like, in those big games, like, that's when the rotation shrank, so right. In those type of games, I didn't really get to do too much until my senior year. And my senior year, it still didn't go the way I wanted because, in my mind, like, it's my senior year, like, it's my turn, like, I'm going to be starting, but my coach wanted me to be that sixth man, to be, like, the instant offense, and he wanted to, like, move, like, a younger guy, like a freshman or a sophomore, in that spot to go along with, like, Scoop and Rick, everybody. So, like, to get everything, like, get them acclimated into how things go. So, my senior year, I was just, like, the sixth man, but I felt like I should have been starting. But I just made the best of it. We, like, still was good. We wound up going to the championship. We lost, though, so we didn't get our three-peat for my senior class. But it was still a good experience. Like I said, the competition every day, the type of talent that was in the gym, is you, like, got no choice but to get better.
Right.
Or you'll get embarrassed, like, because those guys are trying to get better every day just like you. And at this time, they have high recruits, top 100 recruits and things like that. So they're going to embarrass you if you don't come to play. So, right. Like, every day is a constant battle. So, like, on the court, it didn't really help me, like, playing-wise, like getting my recruitment and everything going. But as a basketball player, I got better every day and was playing competition that I wouldn't be able to play at too many other schools in Philly. So I just made the best of it.
So, and then, you know, after Newman is kind of when things got a little bit interesting for you. So talk a little bit about your journey after you left Newman and up until the point you ended up at Lock Haven.
All right, so at Newman, I graduated at, like, 17. So I wanted to go to prep school, like, to get a reclass year. And I had a couple schools that was, like, that would have, like, was interested in me if I was to reclass. But my mom, like, you know, out of my relationship with my mom, is like, it was, like, mostly me and her, and she didn't understand that aspect of it, like, with the whole basketball and recruitment process, and how sometimes reclassing can help your recruitment. She didn't necessarily understand that, and by me having good grades and being accepted to colleges and everything without basketball, it was like she was just pushing me to just keep going. Right. Like, just go through, go to college, just go. So I was supposed to, like, out of Newman, I had, like, Shit wanted me to come on as, like, a walk-on. So that's what I was going to do, because I wanted to go D1, but I'm like, I'll at least go D2. So Shit showed interest in me. Nestor was the person that was recruiting me, like, during the playoffs and, like, our championship stretch at Newman. He was recruiting me, so I started getting in contact with them. And I was going to go there, but I actually got, like, a notice for, like, summer classes. Like, they wanted me to take summer classes. And me, in my mind, I was thinking, like, I don't know, like, do I want to go to school? Or, like, because, you know, I'm finally graduated high school. I got a little freedom.
Right.
And my recruitment wasn't what I wanted. So I'm like, I didn't even know, like, if I wanted to even still do it, because I fucked it up. I didn't get my just due at Newman, so I was a little down on myself. But I eventually hid the letter from my mom. So I actually couldn't go. I couldn't go the first semester, like, because by the time I responded, it was too late to register for the classes. So they told me that I wouldn't be able to come. I would have to wait until the January semester. So that next semester, I had to, like, take classes at community college and take a couple classes to get my GPA transfer over. So I did that, and I was at SHIP. I set out that first year, like, that half semester, and then the next year, it was the next fall, is when I tried out to play. So I ended up playing. I ended up making it, and, like, practice got going, and it was, like, we were good, but, like, I don't know, we underachieved a little bit, and I didn't necessarily get the time, once again, that I felt as though was warranted for me. So at this time, it's like, all right, this is high school, and things isn't going my way now. My first experience at college, things not going my way. So now in my mind, I'm thinking, like, man, something not right. Like, maybe I ain't as good as I think I am, or something along those lines. So I, like, got a little down on myself. I, like, stopped going to class. I, like, wasn't really getting in tune with my schoolwork. I was just, I don't know, just up there just feeling sorry for myself. And I eventually, like, my GPA got too low and I was dismissed. So, like, throughout me getting dismissed, I had to, like, write, like, an appeal letter. And, like, throughout the appeal letter, you, like, tell things about your life, like, what's been going on throughout your year, like, what led to you to not stand up to the standards that the school holds, like, GPA-wise.
Right.
So throughout my appeal letter, Nestor, like, was helping me throughout the process. So he, like, saw my, like, appeal letter, and he, like, was like, wow, like, he didn't realize everything that some of the things that I had been through. So he tried to help me get my appeal, but my appeal was denied, and I was dismissed from school. But Coach Nestor, like, would still keep tabs on me from time to time, but after he heard what I was going through, like, he wanted to make sure that I was okay. So he would just check on me from time to time. And then when he finally got the Lock Haven job, he called me, like, the next day. And he was like, hey, like, I got the job at Lock Haven, like, you still want to get back into school? So I'm like, yeah, like, you know, like, I'm down here in Philly, there's a bunch of nonsense going on around me, like, I need to get away from this. But he's like, yeah, he like, well, it's more so about getting you in school first. Like, I just know, like, that you had, like, a rough patch, so I just want to make sure I can help you at least get into school. Like, basketball is something that you can just worry about later on, but it's more important about just you getting your education. So he helped me, like, get my transcripts from SHIP and figure out everything I needed to do to be accepted into the university. So I had to, like, go to community again, get my take some classes to get my GPA up that would transfer over, so I can get in a Lock Haven. And then, so I did that. I went for a semester, and then the next semester I was supposed to come to Lock Haven in the middle of the year. And he told me, he was like, there's, like, a rule, like, an eligibility rule, where you've been out for, like, a year and a half now, but if you're out for 2 years, they, like, waive your ineligible status, and you can just come right in. So he was like, I know you want to get away from home, so it's like, you can just come up here for the semester, get away, sit out, and just be a student, and you'll probably lose your year eligibility, or you can just sit out this semester, come back in the fall, and then you can start fresh. So I'm like, I want to get out of Philly. I'll weed it out.
Right.
So then I go to Lockheed, and that's why when we all got there, and like everybody don't know that, like I pretty much had to like earn my way on the team. Like it was like I had an upper hand, but like I still had to like earn my spot.
Mm-hmm.
And like Nestor didn't even like expect what he expected from me. I had my meeting with Nestor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was happy to get like a good 12 points, maybe 4 or 5 assists. I mean, 4 or 5 rebounds, a couple assists, play some defense. Like that was his expectations for me. But in my mind, I was like, man, like I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to do something big here. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I still like didn't know because at this time I didn't have much high school experience. I didn't have any college experience.
Mm-hmm.
So like most of my experience is just like playing around other good players like in the summertime or. Yeah, like pick up in the summertime or in like neighborhood summer league.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I know I can compete, but like my school and my college career says otherwise. So like part of me is still doubting myself. So I didn't like want to sound like too like cocky when he told me that his expectations for me. I just was like, all right, well, that's just the least I got to do because that's what he's asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that first game came, we played up shit, which gave me extra motivation because now we're playing at SHIP our first couple games in front of the coach who, like, didn't necessarily play me or anything when he had me, so I just wanted to go out there and ball out. And I went out there. We won our first game at about, like, 25-7 points, and that's when I just, like, I knew it wasn't me. Like, I did it just about my opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I was just happy that I was finally able to showcase what I can do.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny that you bring that up because, you know, for the listeners, to give you guys context on what me and Wally ended up coming in at the same time. I was 17 coming straight out of high school. So I was in a similar situation like when you graduated. And I had taken the route to just go straight to college because I didn't, you know, really want to do another year of high school because, you know, reclassifying was an option for me. But, you know, I got a Board of Governors scholarship that paid my tuition. It was just kind of pointless to try to do, you know, reclassifying it. And, you know, with Nestor also, you know, recruited me as well. And he had mentioned that he had like a few other guys that were coming. But like our recruiting class was nowhere near what it ended up being when I committed in November. So, and then obviously we all get to Lock Haven at the same time and we didn't have any identity because we're coming into a team that was 0-25 the year before and literally what was there 4 players when we got there that were left from the previous year, which was Rel, Julian.
Rel, Julian, Nate, Sander, and Ace.
And Dre, right. So there was 5 guys remaining from the previous team, and I think we had like what 13 on the roster,
right?
So he really completely overhauled the roster. None of us knew what to expect coming in, what our roles were actually going to end up being, and especially me because I'm sure the role that Nestor thought I was going to have when I committed in November was not what he expected. You know, when I actually got there after, you know, all the commitments that he ended up getting. So at that point, it was just kind of a free for all. And I remember our, you know, our first like pickup runs is we all really met in the rec. We didn't really meet. I mean, that's essentially where we met, you know, obviously before preseason started and things like that. And we got the opportunity to play together. And I remember what, you know, kind of as a player, you're kind of like trying to figure out like, okay, who can do what, whose game is this, as far as like amongst your teammates. And I remember one of our pickup games where you got a steal, got a breakaway, and it was kind of a 2-on-1. You had one guy trailing, but you had a defender who was like, probably should have sliced you, but like almost kind of tried to like jump with you, but he like jumped through you and you went off 2 feet, cocked it back and dunked it. And that was the first time anybody had like pulled off a dunk in the rec amongst any of us. And I was like, dang, like I was in shock because, you know, coming from where I come from, like that doesn't just happen. And I was like, all right, this dude's a little bit different. Like that's he just caught a body like 3 days into school into the school year after wreck. So like it was crazy to me. Yeah, and you know, and then we, you know, again we get into practices and stuff like that, and that's when roles started getting defined. But I'll never forget that first win at Ship, because it was a complete team effort. It was Coach Nestor's first ever win. And then we have the famous picture we all took in the locker room afterwards. Was awesome. That was such a great experience.
Yeah, that was everybody's first win.
Yeah.
Definitely for me.
Yeah, exactly. Because and most of the guys that were there, you know, had never really experienced winning before at all, let alone to start a season with a win. And we actually started pretty well. We were 5-4 in the first 9 games. And ended up hitting a tough slide towards the middle. Our inexperience started the show eventually.
Yeah, that was the worst part of my basketball life. I never lost that much of my life, but it got to me, and it actually made us stronger, because we saw, like, what I noticed, like, everybody saw, like, how they treated us while we lost. It wasn't the fact that we were losing, but you know how it was. Like, some of the schools just didn't have respect for us at all as a program. And, like, that's the part that made me mad. Like, when they were just, like, we were just, like, the scum of the conference. Like, they just thought that they were just going to come in and just walk all over us. So that was the part that just that said with me, like, I can take a loss, but when they were trying to, like, disrespect us or shame us, that's when I was like, nah, this got to change.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, you know, you had mentioned this was the first, you know, you had some doubt because you didn't really have a ton of playing experience, but, like, as the season like went on and you kind of established yourself as the go-to guy, I can't remember. Did you win the scoring title that year?
Yeah.
Yeah. So your leading scorer in
the. Actually, I lost. I lost towards the end.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chris Town.
Right, right.
The
so.
Chris Town caught me at the end. I was leading like all the way to like 2 games left in the season.
That was what, Micah Fraction?
Fraction.
Yeah. Who also went on to play overseas. So understandable.
He started going crazy. Yeah. Like 40, 37, I'm like, because you know, at that time, that's when it was East and West. So earlier in the season, I was playing most of the East team. So I was like, my numbers were like off the charts. And like, he was playing cross matches. So he was playing a lot of West teams. So you know, the West, at that time, it was like a whole different ball game. Like, East was like a little, I feel like more fast paced. The West is more like dump it down and like more physical. So, so it was like, that was the lighter that we went on. Like, I started out hot and then I just like was just cruising through all. He started out a little slow and then like finished out real strong.
Yeah. So, you know, as that season goes on, you know, talk a little bit about how, you know, the adjustment was into not only becoming like the go-to guy, but also like the leader of the team. Cause you're, you know, even though it's your, technically your sophomore year, you're still one of the like older guys in the locker room and stuff like that. So talk about that kind of adjustment that you had, especially throughout that first year.
Yeah, so my first year at Lock Haven would have been my senior year, like, had I, like, went all the way through at Ship.
Mm-hmm.
So coming into it, that was, like, the main thing that Nestor wanted from me. He was like, a lot of these guys are going to be new to this college thing, and they're going to go through a lot of the same experiences that you went through, so I'm going to need you to be, like, very vocal and just, like, even if you don't, like, if you're not, like, on them every day, just at least, like, let them know your story and some of the things that you did so they can understand that there's somebody there who understands where they've been through and that they can talk to and that they can learn from, like, just to know that, like, well, not to want to go through, because I'm, like, nobody wants to get kicked out of school and have to go home to bad circumstances, so... Yeah, that was like one of the most important things that he wanted me to do, was like just be a leader of the team. So, and for me, you know, I'm kind of quiet. So that was like something that actually helped me get out of my shell a little bit, because I'm used to being the guy who just another guy on the team, like who just plays his role, does the little things, and just does whatever is necessary to win. But now I'm like actually like be like a vocal leader, like try to lead guys and like put up points, so it was a great experience for me, because it like pretty much got me out of my shell and like got my confidence a lot higher.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because you know I didn't actually really learn your story, which is, you know, kind of what we started with today, until my sophomore year, your junior year, where we did a similar kind of thing, like Q&A, for a project I was doing in school at the time. And at that, you know, as you you grow with teammates and you learn more about them, like your perspective of them changed. And I, not to say that I had like a, you know, I didn't really have much of, we didn't have like as close of a relationship as I would say we had afterwards and now. And I was like, you know what I mean? I was always wowed and intrigued by that because of, you know, what you went through. And it kind of made me understand more about how big of a success story this was for you. Even after our first year, we weren't great, but like we were clearly on the cusp of something as far as developing. And then especially when we found out we were moving from the West to the East, you know, and that was made official. And we knew that we were going to have more success in the East simply because like our play style, you know, which was more open. Right. So, you know, so now we get into our second year, your junior year, and as a team, easily our best season, as a team.
The best season in the last few years.
Yeah. And the best season Lock Haven's seen in a while, probably since the early 90s. You know, and we had a tremendous run. Talk about your best memory, you know, from that season that we had.
Oh yeah, you know what the best memory
is. I already know.
East Stroudsburg at home, we got the win. They was number 2 in the country. I got my 1,000th point in the same game. I made the game winner.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just doesn't get any better than that. Like you can't rate it any better than that. Like you're playing the number 2 team in the country. They're undefeated, coming into your house. You got a packed gym for, like, where the whole school is just there. Like, you know, like, and that was another thing. Like, we went from not having anybody in our games to having like one of the biggest like home court advantages in the conference.
Yep.
So like that energy that we started to feel, like that helped us take it to another level. And just the number 2 team in the country, and they were like late, and this is like later in the season. They probably won like 24, 25 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like that game. This was crazy. And it was like back and forth. You know, like those East Stroudsburg games, like up and down.
Yeah.
It was just like a great game. Then I got my 1,000th point throughout the game. It was just like, you know, it was just the best.
It was a special night. And to give you guys some context, so our freshman year, one of the like big wins that we had early on when we, you know, had that early start was against East Stroudsburg, who even at the time they weren't as good as when we ended up playing them our sophomore year, but they were very good. They were still one of the best teams in the conference, and we went in their home gym and beat them, and that was huge for us. And then coming into our sophomore year, we knew we were a better like overall team because now, you know, Bootsy's playing. We had Brahim, who also they were redshirting the previous year. Now they're on the floor getting playing time. We were truly 10 deep at that point. Jules is back off of his, you know, injured redshirt year. So we were loaded, you know, 10 deep. Everybody contributed in some way. And that going into that ESU game, we had a tough game with them when we played them on the road, but we always knew we could battle with them because we had that experience beating them the year before. And that entire game was back and forth. And, you know, Wally ends up hitting a clutch late shot, and then they had a chance to respond, came down to an inbounds from underneath the basket, and a very close miss floater at the buzzer.
Do you remember even before the miss folded, do you remember when he got the wide open 3 in the corner?
Oh.
And he shot the ball and it got stuck?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's how it came out. It's actually how it came out of bounds. So, yeah, he missed exactly. An open gutter ball, an open 3 from the corner, which gave that they had, you know, jump ball arrow and took it out.
Yeah.
And then missed that floater. I'd never forget that shot went up. Like, the entire, like, arena was, like silent. Waiting for that ball to hit the back of the rim or something, because it was a decent. Yeah. He got a decent look off. Like it was absolutely to make him a shot.
They ran the same play. So the first time I was so worried about him just scoring in general that I went under the screen, and that's how he was able to get all the way to the 3-point line. It was wide open. Mm. So luckily, it got stuck. So the second time, I'm like, I will refuse to let him shoot a three. So now when he came off the screen, I like trailed him. So he like looped around a little bit and like had me on his back hook. And he just quartered a shot to floater. I'm like, well, at least even if he make it, go to overtime instead of him hitting that three and being us. Because yeah. I feel as though, like, you know, like our sophomore year, we had some heartbreaking losses. Oh, though, like, and I just was like, come on, man, like, don't do this. And when it went on, that's when I felt like that was the start of something special.
Oh, and it really was, man. Like, as soon as that ball hit the ground, and that buzzer sounded, the court storm, first time I've ever been a part of a court storming before, and it was certainly an epic night afterwards. That was a fun night as a team hanging out. Not going to get into the specifics, but that was a good night. So, you know, and then obviously we have our, you know, the rest of that regular season, we finish, I think, third in the East. And had an unfortunate loss, blew a big lead in the playoff game against Millersville. So, and now we're going into our junior year. We end up losing my junior year, your senior year. We lost Sheaf, who was a huge part of our offense and our success. But we still had plenty of talent, you know, around us, but you know,
we had the same team. He was the only person that we lost.
Yeah, right? same exact core, but no Sheaf, which turned out to be a pretty big loss. We were still, you know, very, very solid and competitive. I wouldn't say we were quite as good as the year prior, but, you know, still about the same place. And one thing I want to get into is something, some film you recently sent to me. We had a game on the road against Kutztown. Al was out due to injury, who was our starting point guard. And it was a big game for us because we were kind of fighting for playoff positioning, not to make it, but like as far as our seeding and things like that. Kutztown was a team that we were competing with, and it was essentially a must win on the road during winter break, you know, which is always tough, or right after winter break, I should say, which is always kind of tough. And I end up having the best game of my career, and you end up hitting a game winner in that game, and use that game film. Yeah, and it was a shootout, you know, in that game. And I always give you a ton of credit for how well I played in that game, because, you know, one of the things that I always struggle with was, you know, Nestor had like this specific role for kind of our entire point guard position, really, which was like a spot up kind of shooter. And that wasn't really ever my game. And we ran a lot of set plays and stuff like that. And before that game, you came to me, you said, yo, you know, we need this win. Forget all the play calling. Forget the, you know, get your roll out. I want you to pick up 94 feet full court every minute you on the floor and play your game. And I was like, you know what? Who knows how many starts I'm going to get from here on out. I might as well. And so I absolutely took your advice. I even went back and watched the film, and the entire, pretty much the entire game, I picked up 94 feet, and I started with hit a three, and then hit celebrated, which coach told us not to do before the game. But I'll get to that point. But hit a three, hit a pull up, and then, you know, kind of got us started. I had 9 of our first 13. And then, you know, you got hot a little bit after that and kind of led us the rest of the way.
You carried us the whole first half. First half, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I might have had like 4 points. And then the second half in overtime, that's when I like started to get going.
Yeah. And it was, you know, and it was big, man, because I think that was something that was kind of holding us back, as we were so worried about like trying to stay within our roles and things like that.
Exactly.
And we just kind of, that game, we just kind of went out and played with that kind of freedom. I know I did for the first time in my entire career. And, you know, that's just kind of a testament to your, you know, your leadership as an older player. You understood the impact of that game and, you know, that you were going to need me to play my regular game, you know, that you knew I was capable of in order for us to get that win. So, you know, that was big, you know, for us, a big win. I think afterwards, we kind of what seed? I think we ended up with like either the third or fourth seed again, heading into playoffs.
I think we were fifth because we played on the road.
Oh, right. Yeah, we went. We ended up finishing fifth. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, kind of an up and down season for us after that. But you know, overall, ended up being a good end to your college career. Ended up, you know, playing in the PSAC playoffs twice. You know, which as a program hadn't been done back to back in back to back seasons since 89-90. And we, after you left, we ended up going again and kind of extending that streak. But we set a standard for the program at that point, you know, and we were no longer the doormat that when we came in, we were. And I think that's something like that I can always look back on and say, you know what I mean? We didn't win. Sure, we didn't win championships or titles or anything like that, but we absolutely shifted, you know, the perception of that program.
Yeah, we changed. We built the program. Like we helped get that program to.
Yeah.
I said they haven't been to in a long time.
And some great players have come after that. You know, Amir, you know, ended up scoring 1,000 in 2 years. Went on to be the nation's leading scorer when he transferred to Shaw and got some G League looks, and things like that. They got some talented scorers that are there now. So. You know, we always look back and really see like that we were kind of the ones that started that shift, and that's something we can always be proud of.
Exactly.
But so
that's one thing they can't take from us. Like we started it, so like no matter like hopefully like one day we get to the point where they get a championship and like those guys will be able to say they got the championship, but nobody will be able to like take away the fact that we helped start the program, get back.
Absolutely.
On the scale.
Yeah. So, you know, now your Lock Haven playing career is over. And, you know, as I mentioned, you hear all the accolades that he had going in, you know, in the beginning of the episode. You know, so now post-college basketball career, you're getting some international looks. So talk about that first year after college ended, where you ended up going and your experience.
Okay. Leaving after my junior year, after the All-American year.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, Sheaf was our teammate, and, you know, he was, like, all-conference, and he was, like, trying to pursue a basketball career. And, you know, he was my roommate at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't leave necessarily when school got out because he was graduating, so I wanted to stay up for the graduation. So we, like, just up there, like, during finals week, just chilling. He, like, on the phone with agents and everything. So, like, he's on the phone with agents, and they, like, asking about me, like, what is the other guy, your teammate, going to do the All-American? Like, we probably get a promotion guy together as a package deal. Like, what are y'all trying to do? So, I'm like, so she come in my room. He like, yeah, I'm talking to this agent. He asking about you. So, I'm like, what you mean? So, he like, let me in on the conversation. So, now I'm listening to all this stuff, and I'm like, wow. Like, at this time, you know, I'm a little older, so I'm like, the clock is kind of ticking. So, I'm like, do I want to leave? So now I'm, like, contemplating leaving and pursuing a career at that time. And then I actually went to his graduation and seeing his family and the way that they felt and how big of an accomplishment I felt as though it was. I just wanted to experience that for my family. So I ended up coming back. But, yeah, I was very close to not even coming back my senior year.
Wow. I never even knew that.
Yeah, like, I didn't even tell Nestor. Like, the conversation went from me, Sheaf, and then, like, the agents that he was talking to, and the only other person I talked to about it was my mom, just to ask her if she would be mad if I decided not to finish school. So, when my mom gave me the go, it was just like, all right, so now I just got to think about what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, at the same time, like, I saw Sheaf graduating, and then, like, we had big expectations coming into that senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt as though we had another level that we could have got to and things that we could have proved.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't necessarily work out. But,
yeah,
that was a little wild. So, yeah, so after that, you know, like, based on my story, like I said, I wasn't really highly recruited. And, like, even while I was playing, during Lock Haven, like, you know, like, I was, like, we weren't necessarily on the biggest scale. Like, we were in a good conference and we were making noise, but, like, we didn't really get to scrimmage any D1 schools or we didn't play too many non-conference teams, like, prestigious non-conference teams because of our history. Like, nobody really wanted to play us.
Right.
So, like, we didn't get that until, like, after I left. When, like, y'all last year, like, I think y'all got a scrimmage, right?
That was after I left.
That was after you. So, yeah. So, y'all didn't even really get it. So, like, it took years to see we get, like, D1, like, scrimmages and better schedules. So, at that same time, like, I still felt as though, like, I was still a little under the radar. Like, I didn't know, like, what was going on in the business world, like, what my recruitment would be like, or, like, how things were. So, I was a little out of the loop. Like, I had agents calling my phone, like, asking me, like, do I want to sign with them? They, like, telling me their plans for me and things like this. And, like, it's, like, all surprising to me right now. Coming from my story, I'm like, damn, like, this is all happening. And then, you know, it happens quick because we get out of school in, like, May. And then, like, that's pretty much the off season has already started right there. So you, like, go from graduation, like, right into the off season and trying to figure out what your next step is going to be. So it was all just happening so fast. And I was just trying to process everything. So I just felt as though, like, I just made a couple bad business decisions, like putting my trust in the wrong people, and it, like, hitting me a little bit. But I still was able to, like, I ended up being able to, like, go to a couple camps and get a couple workouts based off my resume. And that's how I initially got my foot in the door to go to El Salvador. I went to, like, a camp. I actually, my first year out of graduation, I had, like, a training camp deal with a team in Canada. But, well, actually, it was a mini camp. I went to a mini camp for, like, a team in Canada. They, like, called me out there, but they were in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Detroit. I drive to Detroit, all the way from Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Drive to Detroit, go to the workout, do good. And then they're like, well, we want to have another private workout tomorrow in Canada. Mm-hmm. But me, I didn't have my passport on me, so I couldn't even go to the private workout. And then they wound up just, like, letting me go. But by this time, I had pretty much stalled out on every other opportunity that came my way, because that's the opportunity that I started to throw had been best for me. And then when that didn't work out, I was, like, out of it, because now at this time it's, like, November, December, like, most of the season's already started.
Mm-hmm.
So now I was just, like, behind the eight ball a little bit. So then I was just, like, trying to get any workouts, any type of things that I can get into. And I wound up just finding an exposure camp that I went to, and I wound up playing good. That's how I got the deal to play in El Salvador. And so that's how I pretty much got my foot in the door.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think this is important for people to hear, you know, and it's even for, like, young kids coming up playing basketball at the Division I, Division II, whatever level you're playing at. You know, this is a guy who was an All-American in college and, you know, is coming out, like, the overseas basketball life ain't as glamorous as a lot of people, you know, want to paint it to be, you know, from what you're saying, or it's not as easy to get into as people make it overseas. Cause, you know, and I think what, like, people don't understand is, like, yeah, you'll have a, you know, for, especially for someone like you, who was a All-American in one of the toughest conferences in Division II, you're still competing against, like, all these guys who played, like, you know, Division I, who didn't make it pro and still want to continue their careers and stuff like that.
And just to piggyback off of that, like, not only is it guys that play D1, like, even guys who played at prestigious schools that didn't even play, like, or, like, at the same, like, level playing field. Like, a guy could have Duke, and, like, he could have been a guy who never got on the court for Duke.
Mm-hmm.
But just because he got Duke on his resume, that means a lot, as opposed to a person who got great numbers at a smaller school, but it's not Duke.
Yeah.
Like, you got to think, when you're dealing with another country, they know by, they go, they, there's prestige to them. Like, that's what they see on YouTube, or that's what they see on TV. So that's what they gravitate more towards, and not understanding that there's good players at all levels. It's just about a player-by-player thing.
Right. So, yeah, so, you know, you had to do a lot of self-marketing and things like that. You know, the film that we talked about as far as the Kutztown game, you know, was something that you sent out, you know what I mean, to try to help, you know, promote yourself and things like that. So, it's good to hear that insight, you know what I mean, as far as, like, what the journey is like. So,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I definitely feel like most ballers, like, growing up now, like, y'all should understand, like, the branding part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part that I was losing track on. Like, I just thought that everything was just like me playing and being good. Mm-hmm. Everything was going to take care of itself, and it had the opportunity to, but I didn't know like who was what and what was what. Like, I didn't do my research into like picking agents or picking representatives or the process. Like, I wasn't necessarily educated on it, so that led me to not being able to make the right decisions because I didn't really know. And like I said, everything happened so fast. Like, it's like you're pretty much on the spot. Like, probably get like a day or two to respond to like a workout or a tryout or a job. So it's like, it just happened so fast, and you just like gotta make decisions. So I think it's really important for kids, even in high school, that like once you understand your brand and your value and what you bring to the table, and know how to navigate through the business. Know how, like, just do your research, more importantly, just so nobody can try to fast talk you out of anything. So that was the part that I felt as though I lacked it on. So I think that's more important. Like, a lot of guys who are playing overseas, or even if you're college, going down to high school, like, just give that knowledge and just share your experiences with people so they can make better decisions.
Right. Yeah, wonderful insight. So we'll pick back up. So you had mentioned that you ended up landing on a team in El Salvador, so talk a little bit about your experience there, what it was like playing, and you actually, ended up having quite a bit of success down there.
Yeah, so actually when I first got there, I got picked by Albasan. I actually went over there for like a tour. Mm-hmm. First, I went over there for a tour, so that means we played like a good four or five teams out of leagues, but it was like both leagues, they got two leagues over there. Mm-hmm. So I think out of like the five games, we played like two from the lower league and like two, it was like three from the lower league and like two from the top league. So we go over there, we play, I do good, and a team from the lower league like was interested in signing me, so they're like, well, we about to start preseason, like, you should just stay, like, after the tour, like, you should just stay and work out with us, and we got a couple preseason games, exhibition games coming up. So I stayed after the tour, so now I'm just over there, and we had, like, a preseason game, and we play in a preseason game, and I go off. So, like, I go off, and they're, like, the lower team played at the same gym as the bigger team, so, like, the representatives from the team from the higher league were actually at the game, and they saw what I was doing, and they were like, already in season, they like, it's like, yo, like, we need you, like, and they pretty much called me up, like, they pulled me out, and got me on their team, and then I finished out the season with them, and then I initially got to play a whole season with them after that.
So, and then talk a little bit about like the club experience. You had mentioned, this with me before, like, outside of basketball, like, what was the, team experience like, like the ending towards it?
So yeah, El Salvador is, I don't know, a lot of people know, it's like a third world country. So, then it was very violent at a time. It was just like, kind of was like the murder capital of the world, like, while I got there, and it's like still high on the list when I got there. Like, it wasn't number one anymore, but it was still high, so it was pretty dangerous. And like in any like place you normally have like your more urban city like type area, then you have like your rural area. So my team was in like the rural area, so I was able to like walk around. Like, it wasn't a lot to do there because like it was out in the middle of nowhere, but I was able to like walk around, at least engage with people in the community. And like from Lock Haven in our degree, we gotta like study a language. So I chose Spanish. So I was I'm just getting out of school, so I'm like kind of still familiar with speaking the Spanish. So I was able to just walk around and enjoy the culture and just to see like how they didn't necessarily have the best things in life, but they were very happy as a people and they just made the best out of everything. So it like humbled me to realize like all the little things that we might complain about that they don't necessarily have, and they're like just happy as ever, like not having too much of anything. So like that culture like was a great thing, like, that was great to see. And just like the team wise, like I said, it was like a poor country. And my team, like during the half season, re-election. So, like, going into that next season, like, things changed. Like, he had to take a leave, like, take a leave from the team. So, he led, like, certain people in charge to run everything. And it was, like, a lot of, like, conflict between the people that was in control and making decisions. And people were, like, rubbing the sponsors and things the wrong way. So, like, we started losing sponsors. So, like my first jersey, our first jerseys had a certain amount of patches. Then the next one, like, we were just losing patches from sponsors. And things were getting a lot worse. And, but throughout that, like, we still, like, still stayed afloat for the most part. Like, we still was pretty good. Like, the budget got changed. So, like, our roster was, like, completely different. Like, they pretty much put all their money into the imports, and we just pretty much had, like, open tryouts for, like, the local team, pretty much. So, like, we were, like, we were playing with, like, 40-year-old guys. like, we got, like, 17-year-old kids. So, like over there, it's a little different. Like, you can, like, be in college and still get paid to play. So, like, we got kids that's, like, taking classes during the day and then coming to practice and working out with us throughout the night. So, like, our team was just, like, it was very different. They tried to compete, but we made the best of it. Like I said, they put their money into the import, so that means we had some big shoes to fill on a nightly basis. Like, we rarely got out, and we had to, like, produce at a high level for to keep the team afloat, and we pretty much did that. I think we finished, like, 19-9 out of, like, 28 games. We were, like, top four in the conference, in the country, like, in the standings. So, like, we did pretty good with what we had, but it was just, like, the change and, like, everything that went on. It was just a lot. Like, it was just hard as though it could never just be easy, like, for me.
Right. So, you know, you, after that experience in El Salvador, you know, you bounced around a little bit, and then this year you ended up in the ABA. Yes, people, the ABA still exists, still very competitive league. And you were playing with the Camden Monarchs and actually had a very good season. You had some pretty talented teammates as well. You know, talk a little bit about this season that you had, you know, with the Camden Monarchs.
Yeah, like that pretty much came out of nowhere. Like, one of my mentors, like, he just reached out to me, like, because he's my mentor. He's a coach now. He, like, coaches AAU, and he coaches DeJuan Wagner's son. DeJuan Wagner Jr. Like, he coaches him.
Yeah.
So him and DeJuan Wagner have, like, a relationship. So I guess DeJuan Wagner, he's, like, he's big in Camden. So he was, like, telling him, like, that this was the team was getting started. So he was telling me, like, what's going on. Like, they're paying their guys. They got a lot of things going on, like, business-wise, where they're, like, helping their players, like, just succeed, whether it's just in basketball or outside of basketball. Like, they were big on just trying to improve and just, like, help guys throughout the community do basketball. So he told me, gave me information to go down there and try out. And I was like, all right, cool. I went down there and tried out. Crazy story. I actually almost got cut somehow, some way. But because one of the coaches, I don't know, the head coach just, I don't know what it was. He just, okay. I was like, wanted to go in a different direction. But, like, there was a coach on the team who, like, stood up for me, like, big time. I was like, because I actually played for him this summer in a pro-am in Philly. So, like, I guess he, like, put in a good word for me. Coach was like, nah, like, we need this guy. And then we come in, and I wasn't starting. Like, I wasn't doing anything. And I led us in scoring, like, from day one, like, just coming off the bench. Like, my first game, I didn't get in probably until, like, I got in, like, a little bit in the second quarter. But I didn't really get into, like, 3-4 minutes left in the third quarter. And the whole fourth quarter, and I wound up, like, helping us come back to win. I wound up just leading us in scoring. So then, like, after that, he was like, oh, okay, like, this guy's kind of good. But at the same time, he's still, like, I don't know, I guess he thought it was a fluke or something. Like, he just still wasn't, like, he still wasn't giving me the just do it. He actually wound up getting fired.
Oh, wow.
And the guy who stood up for me and, like, got me, like, to help me stay on the team, he actually became the head coach. So that was like the first time where I like really saw like how real the business was. Like at that time, we were like 6-7-1.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were still winning, but I guess they just, the organization just felt as though they wanted to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. So that's when I was just like, wow, like this is like real. Yeah, and just, like, through that time, like, we just played, and then, like, we started losing guys, like, they started making change, like, it was just, like, a real, like, business, and like, you just really see, like,
mm-hmm.
how you just gotta make the best of your opportunity, because it can stop, like, that fast.
Yeah.
And then, Rashid Jordan ended up joining the team, like, mid-season, and, like, that gave us a little boost to, like, keep ourselves motivated and keep pushing.
Right.
And we actually had a good season. It mm-hmm. just got cut short with this coronavirus. Mm-hmm. We finished the season second in our region, and we had a good schedule. Like we didn't get to play. I think Syracuse was number one in our region, but we didn't get to play them. So,
okay. But
we felt real high about what we could do. It just got taken away from us.
Yeah. So yeah, it was certainly unfortunate, and that was like the case all around. There's actually an ABA team here in York, the York Buccaneers, and I don't think
I saw that.
I was keeping tabs because a lot of like my like former AAU teammates and people that I grew up with are playing on that team now, and I had noticed that you were playing with Camden. I was looking to see if you guys had ever played. I didn't see that they ever came on your schedule or anything like that.
Yeah, we didn't play them. They were in the rankings though. They were like up there in the rankings, so they definitely were pretty good. And I think mm-hmm. They may have been in our region or like the another region that's pretty close to us. So mm-hmm. it depends. Like if we would have both been like played up to where we're supposed to, we'd eventually played each other down the line.
Right. So does the league have plans for restarting, or are they just going to kind of pick it up again next year?
Yeah, I think they're going to just pick it up next year from what I'm getting.
Are you still playing?
That I don't know. Like, this was like, this year was like my one-shot deal to like give it like one last little go to see like what was still out there. And it was wild because like the doors definitely started opening back up. Like, I was supposed to go to Spain in April for like a week to get a workout. I had like guys then, you know, with like Rashid's story just mm-hmm. coming out of prison, and there was a lot of guys like starting to come to the games to like see what he had, and were like starting to gravitate to me. So it was like mm-hmm. things just
wow.
came at a bad time. So like I don't know. We're trying to see like what happens when everything opens back up and see what's next. So I guess I have to wait this summer to see what the options are, but I don't know
for
shit.
Okay. Well, you know, best of luck to you, of course. You know, we'll keep in touch and, you know, see what's going on. But yeah, I mean, incredible story. It's a crazy journey that you've gone through and all the adversity you've had to come through. And I think, you know, for people listening, that's something you can learn, you know, you can learn from. Especially whether you hoop, whether you don't hoop, you know what I mean? There's whatever the case may be, you're going to have success. You're going to have adversity. And you know, Wally's a living testament to that. So appreciate you coming on the show, man, for real.
No problem, bro. And I'm loving what you're doing with the kids and the coaching and everything, man. I saw y'all had a good year this year. I was following with all your posts and everything. And that's pretty good because I don't know. I think as I segue, that's kind of like what I want to get into too. Mm-hmm. So it was just good to like see you in. Like I've been watching throughout the process how y'all helped those kids throughout those years build and get to that. Kind of like how we did. Like they started yeah. out with pretty much nothing, and they built throughout those years. So.
And it's funny you mention that because that's something that I constantly go back to, you know. And I think like I'm coaching, you know, high school kids. And, you know, I have the same experiences that they went through from high school to college. You know what I mean? Like, I coach at a school where, like, the kids didn't get any respect not too long ago, just a few years ago before our head coach got there and things like that. And now the program's, you know, back on its way up. And, you know, and I told these guys, like, you know, this is something that should motivate you. Like, you guys are going to be the ones that set the standard for this program. And you know, to be able to like draw back on that experience, you see the impact like that it has on your players. They respect you more because they know you've been there. They know you've been in their shoes, and they're more receptive to what you have to say because you've gone through it. You know what I mean? And not the highest level, but like at the level that some of them aspire to play at. You know what I mean? It's a blessing to play college basketball at all. You know, let alone, you know, in the PSAC and or to go on and have the career that you ended up having. So, you know, I highly recommend it if it's something that you're considering, because it almost gives you the feeling of playing again. Like it's very close. I ain't gonna lie to you. It won't ever be the same, obviously, but like, you know what I mean? It's just, you'll see once you get into it, it's hard to explain beyond that, but.
Working at a school this past year, being around those kids, like, that gave me the feel for, like, just, like, wanting to guide the youth and then, like, going back with it. Like, we were actually in the process of, like, starting, like, a summer camp in a little academy this summer, but, like I said, everything just got stopped abruptly, so we'll see what happens once we finally are allowed back out.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, thanks again for coming on the show. We appreciate you, giving us your time. I know you got things going on even with a pandemic. So, be safe. Say hello to little man for me and Kaylee as well. Thank you again for coming on the show.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Send my love to the family, too.
Will do. Will do. And that wraps it up, guys. Episode 9 of the All In podcast. Thank you guys for showing your support. It's me and Mike have appreciated it a lot. It's actually helped us. For those of you who have been following on social media, we've expanded. We're now starting the All In network, where we're going to be taking on other podcasts. That are going to come in under our network. We have a website now where people can, post articles and things like that, write articles for us. So anybody interested in, some freelance journalism, maybe starting a podcast, just go to allinnetwork.net and connect with us. And, we're looking for people to work with. So thank you guys again for tuning in. If you tune, whatever platform you tune in, Apple, Spotify, make sure you rate, subscribe, leave reviews, things like that. Help us promote the podcast. And signing off, this is Eli. Thank you, guys.